Welcome to the Evolved Caveman, where men learn to be successful and happy with your host, Dr. John Schinnerer, as he shares the most impactful ideas and practices for you to get the most from your relationships, your work, and from your life. Now here's Dr. John.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. John with the latest episode of The Evolved Caveman. Happy to have you here. And today I am thrilled to have with me Jason Cutter. Jason is CEO of the Cutter Consulting Group, author of Selling with Authentic Persuasion, Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker, and host of the Sales Experience podcast. He sees himself as a sales success architect for companies and individuals, providing coaching, training, and consulting for companies around the world who want to dramatically improve their selling effectiveness. What makes him so unique is that he didn't have an upbringing focused on sales. His bachelor's degree is in marine biology, which he has actually done work in. Despite this and not getting his first real sales job until he was 27, he figured out how to be successful in sales and has made it his mission to shift salespeople away from classically taught manipulation tactics and inspire and train them to achieve sales success by becoming authentic persuaders. Jason, how the heck are you?
I'm doing amazing. Even better after hearing that intro. That makes me, I feel really good and excited. So, and I'm glad to be here. I think this is going to be super fun.
Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed our friendship, and I'm excited about this conversation as well. So let's start off with just getting to know a little bit about you. What do you look like at your very best? Tell me that story of kind of struggle to success.
Let's see. What do I look like at my very best? It's like, for me, depending on which way you want to go with that, when I'm in the zone and when it's just natural and a home run is when I'm coaching and training and teaching. That's the one thing I've learned throughout my life and kind of what has made me really successful in sales, but then also in leadership and wanting to help other people is that coaching and training moment. The thing that just fires me up the most in life is that light bulb moment in other people when that aha hits them and, you know, they're struggling with something. Could be life, it could be relationships, could be business, sales, whatever it is, and just share something, give them some insight, you know, motivate them or push them in a certain way to take some action. It works, and then they're excited. And so that's what I really love. And I think that's why I was successful in sales as well, is because I want that for people and I want to get them into a better place, with or without, you know, buying from me. It's just about helping that other person and serving them. And so, you know, that's where I'm at the best. How I got there and that realization, it's all been, I mean, you know, I'll reference it as saying, you know, I feel like I was a hot mess for a long time. My path was very windy. I have failed many times, and just made it through. And you know, I really struggled with a lot of things in my life, especially in my head for a long time, which, you know, we'll get to if it makes sense.
Well, and I think, you know, that failure is one of the best teachers, because I think it's so easy for us to get in the comfort zone and not take risks and not learn, not be challenged. So I, you know, while failure is definitely hard to get through, I also think it's one of the greatest teachers.
Yeah. And what I see a lot and what happened to me many times in life, and then I've actually gone the other extreme, so I have to be careful, is a lot of people go ready, aim, and they never fire because they don't want to miss, right? And so what really works well is ready, aim, fire, aim, readjust, fire, re-aim, fire, and kind of doing that. Some people get in trouble where they go fire, ready, aim-ish, maybe I should, let's just keep firing. And they're just like,
and those are the impulsive
all over
people.
The place. Yeah. And so those are dangerous too. So there's a good,
so you got to know where you are on that spectrum.
Yeah. And what you can bring to it and how much time you need to spend in those. A lot of people get stuck in their head. I know I did, where it's like, you know, what if I mess up? What if this happens? What, you know, the analysis paralysis, trying to find the perfect solution in life into whatever you're facing, the business. You know, when I wrote this book, like I wrote the whole thing and then literally threw the whole thing away and wrote it again from scratch a second time. And it's 260 pages. So it wasn't a short book. Like I chucked it aside because it was garbage, but then I picked myself up and wrote it again and I'm happy with it. But, you know, it was a process.
Yeah, I like that saying in business, fail forward fast, which I think speaks to your idea. So, you know, in your message, in your messaging, I know that authenticity is supremely important. So how do you define or how do you think about authenticity?
For me, it's that combination of self-awareness, right? And really knowing who you are, your strengths, your weaknesses, the value you have to other people and what you can provide. And really what excites you and what lights you up, right? Like what do you do that where time loses all meaning? What would you put on your vision board so you have what you know, the deeper reason why you're doing something, not just on the surface level. And then the authenticity piece is that self-awareness combined with your actions, your words, your momentum being in alignment with that, right? Because there's a lot of people who know who they are, and then what you see on the outside is something completely different, and they're doing a different path. Like they know it, but they don't really like it, or they're hiding it, and so they're doing something else instead. And so it's that combination of the self-awareness and the alignment in what you're doing.
So why is that important in sales?
In sales, I mean, part of it is, you know, there's a lot of people in sales who think they have to try to be like somebody else and try to pretend to be someone else, right? The Wolf of Wall Street, the Boiler Room, the Mad Men type of persona. And they're like, that's what it takes to be in sales. And I got to be that person. It's like, no. A, most people don't like buying from that person long-term. That's the first part. And then the second part is you can't sustain that. It's tough to be a professional actor wearing a mask 24/7 and selling and then remembering the story that you're telling everybody, right? That's just, some people can pull it off on the surface, but mentally I see so much mental health issues where people are pretending here and then behind the scenes they're struggling here. And so it's really tough. Plus, people like buying from somebody who's real. They don't need to buy from someone who's perfect, who is this persona of what they think a salesperson should be. People want to buy from someone who's like them, who's just another person who's struggling through life or makes mistakes or learn things and, you know, brings that to the conversation. You know, the perfectly smooth, polished, you know, persona of salespeople actually make customers freak out and keep their defenses up. Because they're like, okay, what's the catch? Where's the angle? Like, what are they trying to do to me? Versus we're just having a conversation.
Well, and it's interesting because it seems to me that vulnerability becomes part of that. That, you know, I remember teaching a course to psychologists and therapists on positive psychology. And I didn't want to start off with the typical introductions of, you know, tell me what school you went to and how many letters you have after your name. And because if I tell you, you know, I'm Dr. John Schinner, I wrote a book, I did this and that, and people are going to be like, fuck you. Like it doesn't connect you to anyone. Whereas if you start off with the story of kind of you at your very best and begin with a vulnerability or a struggle and then how you overcame that struggle, I think it's the struggle piece that really connects us to other human beings. It's that emotional vulnerability. But, you know, this podcast is more about men, and I think men are really reluctant to go there. And so it's easier to just hide behind the wall, the facade, than to share some of your struggle. How does vulnerability or struggle kind of enter into that authenticity?
For me, it's a couple things. One, if we're talking about the book specifically and, you know, the presenting and the podcast and everything that I do these days, there was a shift where I forever have been embarrassed about my windy path. I mean, I've been divorced twice. I've failed many times. I've had a bunch of money. And then I've had less than no money, like super in the hole, like a crazy debt. You know, I've had it, I've lost it. I've had different jobs. I mean, I have my bachelor's degree in marine biology. I worked at Microsoft doing tech support. I got my first sales job at 27. I ran away from sales for a while and worked overseas with the military as a civilian. Like I didn't take a normal path, even though there isn't one, but like I hid that and I was embarrassed by that. And then what I realized is all of that is what made me who I am and also makes me really relatable, right? Because on the surface, we see somebody and we think, oh, they, like you said, they wrote a book, they've got it all together. They've always had it together. They're like, you know, hot shit and they're just amazing. And of course it's easy for them. And I tell people, like, I was a shy, awkward only child who was bullied as a kid with two analytical, loving, but analytical parents. Like, I didn't want to deal with people. That's why I'd rather deal with
And see, I think people can relate to that.
That's the thing. Yeah, exactly.
People can relate to that more than I'm an author. I wrote a book.
Yeah.
Because how many people have written a book?
Yeah. And then the other part is in the sales role and the training role is really making sure, like even in a sales role where I'm talking to somebody, I share whatever, like whatever comes up. I don't try to be the perfect salesperson. You know, a lot of my value to helping someone from a sales perspective is because I've probably been in their shoes or I've seen other people in their shoes and I know they could get to a better place and I know I can help them and relate to them. There's some things I just really probably can't sell. Right? Like I've never had a drug or an alcohol addiction issue. I would be a terrible counselor because it wouldn't be authentic. I couldn't be vulnerable and I can't super relate. But you want to talk about debt or you want to talk about business struggles? Oh man, I'll help you in any way that I can.
Yeah. And I think that that authenticity is so important. The vulnerability as a piece of that. You know, you mentioned your varied background and being embarrassed about that. I think I look at it and I say, well, wow, that's a bunch of different ways that you can relate to a bunch of different people. And so it actually gives you different tools to connect to other people. I mean, I think about that with clients and just being more curious about different areas of life and learning more about those areas so that I have different ways to connect to people.
Yeah. And that's literally what happened to me I think I was 39. I was working overseas. My job was flying around on a plane with a bunch of other people all day. And I remember this one day at work on this one flight, I had shared the Grant Cardone's 10X book with one of the pilots. And we were in this long conversation that spanned from real estate investing to the time that I also spent cleaning fish tanks professionally as a living when I was in community college, you know, like doctors and dentist's office and Chinese restaurants. Like I used to travel around with buckets in my car cleaning those fish tanks to marine biology, to debt, to psychology, to DISC and behavioral, matrix. And it hit me in that moment. Literally, I remember that moment where it was like, oh crap, all of this stuff is valuable. Like I can just talk about anything with anybody. And that's when it hit me and I went, oh, that's not a detriment. That's actually an asset. You know, makes me almost, you know, more deep than somebody who's only done one thing and they got their degree in architecture and they've been doing architecture for 30 years and they've gone this straight path. It's like they can't necessarily share or relate to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it gives you breadth and depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how does empathy play a role in this? How does, you know, putting yourself in another person's shoes or feeling their feeling?
You know, I think that's huge. I think that's important in any conversation or relationship, especially vital for sales, because it's two things, right? It's being able to understand and relate at some level with what the other person's going through. I mean, you don't always say like, I know exactly what you're dealing with because you don't. Like everyone's got a different situation, but I understand it enough and I feel it enough. And then I also want you to get to a better place versus, and I use sympathy and I've researched both of them. Sympathy is usually where it's like, oh, you're down in the dumps. Let me come down in the dumps with you and I'll sit down in the dumps with you and let's hang out there. Empathy to me is you're down in the dumps. I can feel that and I want you to get to another place. So I'm going to help you get to that other place. Like I want to share whatever I can, give you whatever I can, support you in whatever way I can, so that you can move forward. And if you come from a place of empathy in your sales career, everything else is easy because you're doing it for the right reasons. You're motivated with a different intention. And when you, this is the persuasion piece, when you push people to take action and move forward, it's coming from a place of caring and empathy, not desperation with commission breath because you're just trying to close deals. It's like, hey, I'm trying to serve you because I care.
Yeah, and there's a distinction also in there around empathy in terms of there's cognitive empathy and emotional empathy. And a lot of the men that I've worked with have cognitive empathy. So we can put ourselves into other people's shoes intellectually and kind of get an idea of what they're thinking. I think the next step is to develop more or greater emotional empathy so we are aware of what they're feeling. And so to do that, I would argue we need greater emotional literacy. We've got to figure out what am I feeling and more emotional labels to put on our feeling states so that we can identify more with what they're feeling. One of the questions I wanted to get back to is you mentioned that you were kind of embarrassed by your varied past. Was there a process that you went through of getting more comfortable with sharing that publicly?
Some of it was that realization, that lightning bolt moment that hit me that day. And then part of it's just been some coaching. So I had a coach, Sam Crowley, who was helping me with my message and kind of like, what do I do with all of this thing that I have in my head? And what is my value? What is my message to other people? Because I really wasn't clear. And one of the things he told me and was helping me, I told him, you know, our first phone call was an hour long where he just basically had me tell essentially my life story. And he's like, I wish I had your story. Like, that is so amazing. And I used to think, oh, but I'm like a mess. And he's like, no, like, I wish I had your story. And I do that too. I hear other people's stories. I'm like, man, I wish I had their story. That would be powerful. Yeah. But then that helped me shift and go, yeah, like my story is my story and it's valuable to somebody. It doesn't have to be valuable to everybody. And, you know, that was one of the big shifts too, is like the goal is not to have everybody in your tribe, it's to have your tribe in your tribe. And then, you know, Dr. Yeah. John has his tribe and his tribe. And everyone, if they're doing it right, is impacting their own tribes. That's why there's 8 billion of us. And, you know, and so it's about speaking to your group.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, I remember I put up a video on the front page of my website when I was looking for coaching clients. And I ran this by a therapist in my office suite. And she was horrified. She was like, well, oh my God, like, what if people see the video and don't like you? And I was like, that's perfect. Like, perfect. Then they self-select out.
Yeah.
But the people that do like me, that do resonate with me, will come in. And so I, you know, so much of it is fear-based that keeps us from doing this. I mean, like, I've made a point for 15 years of expressing or sharing publicly that part of my makeup is a little depression, part of it's a little anxiety. I've learned how to deal with those, but I mean, I remember the first time I did it on radio, I was scared shitless.
Yeah.
Because I thought I would be mocked. So I that's why I asked the question of, you know, did you have a process of getting more comfortable kind of sharing?
I mean, it's just like anything, more and overcoming any fears or doubts. I mean, it's really like you do it and you realize nobody mocked you or you didn't die. And so it's okay. And then just keep doing it, right? Just like anything else.
Yeah. So any tips on how to increase one's empathy?
You know what? That's a tough one. Somebody asked me that yesterday as well. And I think you can do it. What really helps increase empathy is getting punched in the face by life. That really does it. That
just, yeah, experience.
Like, the experience. And it's not age, it's experience. Because my first sales leadership job that I had, everybody on the sales team was essentially early 20s men. Some of them still living at home and just graduated college and knew each other from this, you know, basically the same fraternity. And most of them didn't, and we were helping people in foreclosure, and most of them had no experience in the real world. And so you get somebody on the phone who starts crying because they're losing their house next week and it's a single mother with kids. And these guys would be like, I don't know what to do. Wow. They'd just be like looking at me like, what the hell, how do I even react? I don't know what to do. And then I hired some other people who they were equally young, but they had been through some tough stuff. And, you know, it helped them in the empathy front. So I think you can kind of work on it. I think you can teach it. Really, it's about life experiences. This is about challenges. And you don't have to have the same challenge, right? You don't have to have, mm-hmm. you don't have to be a single mother losing your home to foreclosure. But if you know what life can do to people and you've seen it, then that really raises it. Now, how to get there? I mean, some of that's just going through life.
Yeah, I mean, part of it for cognitive empathy, what I typically suggest is, you know, just play around with putting yourself in other people's shoes as you go throughout the week. For emotional empathy, I think that's being curious about emotional literacy and kind of finding out more about emotion. I love that level of emotion because we're all the same at that emotional level. And I can connect on any emotion with anyone at this point. And so, you know, you talk about the woman that's scared about losing her home. Well, maybe I haven't been in that spot, but I have been really scared about providing for my family before. I have been uncertain about the future. I have been, I don't know, angry at the circumstances that put me here. Yeah. So I can relate on those levels. So How do, in your book, in your process, in your teachings, how do you help people demonstrate more authenticity?
You know, it's really embracing it and supporting, you know, them. It's the awareness piece first. And then what it is it's just bringing that to the table in the sales conversations and using that and not overtly using it, right? Like, you don't have to be like, hey, I'm being very vulnerable and authentic here, and I'm going to sell to you in this authentic way. It's more just understanding it's okay to bring your strengths, to be a human, to make mistakes, and do it with the right intention, and getting clear on that intention, and then getting clear on your motivation. Like, again, the big picture why, like what you would put on the vision board, what really matters to you, where you really want to go to. And then,
so what is the right intention? Is it like Curly's one thing on City Slickers?
You know, it's really about wanting the other person to succeed and get to a better place, your prospect, whether you sell them or not, even if you just tell them where they should go instead. I mean, I have a whole chapter on the value of telling people no, right? Telling the wrong prospects no, that it's not a good fit. It's kind of a weird chapter in a sales book. Like, okay, let's spend, you know, X number of pages talking about telling people no. But it's, if you're doing it the right way and you're selling something that has a decision-making process, not everyone's going to be a good fit, right? I don't work with people where it's 100% close. Like, everybody I talk to, I got to sell a magazine subscription to. No, this is something a little bit different. And so there's going to be people you tell no to and people you tell yes. Ultimately, you want to do that. I mean, I live by the Zig Ziglar quote of, you know, you help enough other people get what they want in your life and in their lives, and you'll get everything you want in your life. And it's in that order. You help others first. Don't worry about yourself. Like, it will, that's what I tell people all the time. There's 8 billion people on the planet. Don't worry. There's enough people you can sell to. Don't worry about
it. So if I can reframe that intention, it sounds like the intention is serving others.
100%.
In my language. I don't know. And it's funny because I keep coming back to that. I'll talk about, you know, the fact that everyone on this planet wants to be happy. And I think we go about it in a lot of mistaken ways, you know, hedonism, sex, drugs, rock and roll, or fame, wealth, power. But I think the one that I keep coming back to that I think is the way, and I'm open to correction here, is serving others, is taking the spotlight of attention off of me and putting it onto you. Is that in keeping with your thought?
100%. Because if I'm in a sales mode, in a sales conversation, and I make it about the other person, like, it's not about me. It's about serving that other person. Again, whether it's selling them something that I'm offering or not, right? It could be directing them down the way. It also affects how far I'll go. And this is what the subtitle for the book is Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker. There's a lot of people in sales who they're afraid of pushing people forward because they don't want to manipulate. They don't like the feeling when they're pushed or controlled or manipulated or tricked. And so they go to the other extreme. I feel like if you realize your goal is to serve the person you're talking to and you can help them with what you're selling, right? So they have problem X, you have solution X, it's a perfect fit. It's actually your duty and responsibility to persuade them and move them forward as a way to serve them. Because if you don't get them to take action, you've let them down because they'll put their head back in their sand and who knows what's going to happen to them. And so it actually the force behind the persuasion.
It almost feels like altruistic sales.
Yeah.
That, you know, and one of the debates that I've talked about before that I love in the research literature is altruism really altruistic?
Right.
Because, you know, if I help you out, then I get a positive feeling about myself in return. So I actually get something in return. So it's not truly altruistic, to which my response is, I don't give a shit. Do it anyway.
Yep. Yeah.
Be altruistic.
I've heard you talk about that on the show before too. And I agree. I mean, it's tough to give completely unconditionally. You know, they say it's better to give than to receive. Well, the reason why that's true is because it's nice to give and then get that benefit back and the appreciation, or just see someone's happy. They don't have to say thank you, but just seeing it, right? Like giving somebody something, the giver is getting benefit from it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So how would you define success in sales? I mean, is it just about the quota? Is it just about money?
No. I mean, I think that's the score on the scoreboard, right? Like if you're playing any sport, you're playing any game, there's got to be a scoreboard, and it, you know, the money, the deals you close is really an indicator of the value you're providing. If you're not making very much money, you're not providing much value. You're not very effective at transferring that value, right? If you make a lot of money, then you're providing a lot of value, hopefully. Hopefully that's why you're making a lot of money. And so success, you know, for me, success is all about using your talents, your gifts, your abilities in a way that helps other people in some way and provides value. That's success. And then when you do that correctly, then there's going to be some kind of return at some point.
So tell me a little bit more about this authentic persuasion piece of the book. Dig a little bit into that, if you would.
Yeah, so kind of continuing that part, it's about, you know, the book is broken up into three parts. So authenticity, persuasion, and then the intangibles. And so authenticity is the first piece, because what I see a lot is people in sales, people in business, they want the sales tactics. Tell me how to close more deals. Tell me what to say. Just tell me what to say so that somebody can say it, right? Yeah.
Give me the script.
Give me the script. They don't want scripts. Salespeople hate scripts. You can't call it that. But they want the script.
Oh.
They want the nugget, right? Tell me what trick I can use to get people to say yes. It's great, but just like anything else, like it doesn't matter unless you're authentic, which is again that self-awareness, it's the alignment, and it's the understanding of why you're doing it. Same thing, right? Like tell me how I can lose weight. Okay, here's how you can lose weight. But if you don't have the basis and the mindset and the foundation there, it's all garbage, right? It's just going to go out the window. It's not going to work for you. So it's the same thing in sales. So the authenticity piece, then persuasion. I mean, for me, there's a sales success formula that has to happen every time in a sale, no matter what you're selling, any product. And I've sold so many business to business, business to consumer. You've got to do certain things: rapport, empathy, trust, hope, and urgency. Refu. I've never come up with a different phrase for it. I'm not very good at that, but you can't mess with the words. The words are so perfect. And it's got to be done in that order. And so once you understand that, then you have this framework you can apply.
Wait, hold on. So let me go through the framework again, slowly.
So rapport, empathy, trust, hope, urgency. So you've got to have goals. Now, what does that look like? Rapport, obviously, that's easy. Empathy comes from the discovery questions, asking questions, digging deep, because it's fascinating and amazing. You can show somebody that you care and that you're empathetic by literally asking questions and then actually listening. You don't actually have to, you don't do it. Hey, John, I really care about you. I'm empathetic to your situation. No, you're not. Like, but if you ask somebody questions and get them talking, they will feel like, again, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Most salespeople do it wrong, where they start with the monologues. They start with the sermons and the lectures about how amazing they are, how many awards they've won, how great their company is, all the logos they have as clients. Like, nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit. Like, they want to know if you actually care and if you care enough to solve their problem. If you care about them and their situation, because everyone thinks they're a unique snowflake. And so they want to know that you treat them like a unique snowflake. And everyone is unique, but situations are pretty common, right? You see one person in debt, it's like, okay, I got your situation. I got the solution.
Yeah.
Right. It's not too much mystery there. But you know, you want to, you, and this is where you, it, the intention is important, because I've seen people pretend to care and pretend to build the empathy, and then it falls flat because it's not genuine. And then that leads into the trust. And for trust, you can't ask for trust. Hey, Dr. John, you can trust me. It's okay. No, that doesn't work either. So that's a part of the process. Then you give them the hope, which is I have
a solution. Pardon me, to back up a second for the trust, I mean, it almost seems like you have to do some action to create trust.
That's what
I think
first
people right now
are
more skeptical than ever.
Yeah. And that's where the rapport and then the empathy and then the trust is going to be, okay, so I've shown you I care, like I'm here for you. Let me tell you.
So the trust results from the empathy and the rapport. Okay.
Right. With explaining what you do and what the kind of your company is and some basis of it, and as much social proof as needed in that situation, testimonials, stories about other people. And so then that builds the trust, and then the hope is the solution, right? That's like, okay, so based on your situation, here is the answer, right? Here's where you could get to. Here's the promised land. Here's what it's going to be like.
That's when the clouds part and the angels sing.
And it's all gray. And it's like, okay, so here's the solution. And then the urgency piece is just that. It's like, okay, and the time to do it is now, right? That's where a lot of sales people fall flat is they say, okay, here's the solution. Heaven's parted. Okay, let me know when you're interested. I'll send you an email and follow up with you next week. And then hopefully we can talk again. No, like the time is now, right? We're going to do this now because I care about you. And you can apply that to any framework. And that's the persuasion piece and doing it again as your duty and your responsibility.
Yeah, great. Thank you for running through that. So yeah, I was interested in the persuasion piece of authentic persuasion. So do you have any, what are the nuggets there? What are the tips? What are the scripts that you can give me to sell? I'm asking partly in jest, but you know, it's interesting. If I look back at my training in psychology, you know, you're basically trained not to sell yourself, not to overpromise. Right. It's almost unethical to put stuff out on the web. And when I started coaching and started putting stuff out on the web, I really struggled with, you know, writing copy and it was really tough. And I think the thing that kept me going was that I knew there was coaches out there with way less training that were getting paid way more. And I just thought, you know, if they can do it, I can do it.
100%. Now, writing copy and having conversations where you're moving someone forward is two different things. Because in the copy, you know, on a website or an email, you're kind of leading them through those parts and having that conversation, but it's one-sided. So you got to be more strategic versus responding and replying to what somebody says, right? Like, hey, tell me about your situation. Okay, based on that, then this would be a good fit. I think the biggest thing, and this is where most people struggle and go sideways in their sales success, and this goes for whether somebody's sitting in a cubicle in a call center or they're a coach or a consultant and they're a solopreneur and they're trying to sell them and their benefit to somebody to get them as a client. The biggest part is that most people don't act like a professional and assume the sale based on the fact that they know what's best. So I'll give you the example that I use a bunch, and you're a doctor in the psychology side, but let's imagine you break your arm and you go into the emergency room, right? Arm is broken, go into the ER, doctor looks at you, does an x-ray, does their due diligence, checks things, finds the break. And then they say, Hey, John, so your arm is broken and the best thing is for us to fix it. We need to put a cast on it. Is that something you'd like to do today? Do you think that would be interesting? Why don't I do this, John? I'm going to send you an email with some information. Let me give you my card and a brochure. I'll follow up with you next week, see how it's going. And, you know, maybe we can have you come back in and we'll take care of your broken arm then. No, like that would be terrible. Like that, not only would that be a fail, but they would be letting you down. And that would just never happen. They have a different, their Hippocratic oath and their duty and responsibility to people, right? They're actually not going to let you leave if they can help it without fixing it, right? Like if you walk out of there without them taking care of you, they see that as a failure. And so what happens instead is your arm is broken. Here it is in the x-ray. What we need to do is we need to put a cast on it. This is going to hurt a bit. We'll give you some medication to make it better. We'll see you back in 6 weeks. Do you have any questions before we begin? Let's go, right? Hold on. This is going to hurt. And so they just assume the living crap out of it. And if you're a professional, you do the same thing. You have problem X. I have solution X. This is perfect. Do you have any questions? Okay. Next part is I need your name and your credit card. Like just that's it. Like I know.
I like the phrase. I'm going to quote you on that. Assume the living crap out of the clothes.
That's it. As a professional, right? That's the whole quote. Because a lot of people assume the clothes, but it's a misalignment, right? They're just doing it because they're doing it. I do it because I just know. I know that I know. And then for me, I have this weird part of my brain. Maybe it's because I started helping people in foreclosure and various types of debt. And I've been in debt situations, kind of back to that empathy we were talking about. My brain forecasts what will happen if you don't buy from me and the downward spiral that your life or business will go down, right?
So if I'm a salesperson or if I'm trying to become better at sales, maybe I'm not a salesperson, how do I get more of that confidence that you're talking about? You're like, I just know. I know that I know. How do you, any tips on how to become more confident in that knowledge?
If you don't come from that background, so for example, I see a lot of people in sales, in an actual sales role, where they're selling to companies and they're selling them marketing software to help with their marketing automation, right? So that's a good example. And so maybe you've never run a company, maybe you've never been a marketing manager, your director, you don't know what that's like, but you think it's cool and you want to sell your software, right? Nothing wrong with that. What that takes is a lot of research, and you should probably have a lot of conversations with people in those roles, and then not to sell them anything, but to just ask them and interview people and find out, like, what's your worst fear? Like, what keeps you up at 2 o'clock in the morning? Like, what are you judged based on? Like, what are you afraid of? What's your biggest challenges, your biggest struggles? And learn those nuggets about what the worst case scenario is for somebody or what their actual pain is, and then focus on that, right? So if you haven't lived it, then find it and then make that your focus.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because I imagine that degree of confidence is strongly correlated with success in sales. And just like in psychology, one of the best predictors of how successful therapy or coaching will be is how confident is that mental health professional that they can help you?
Yeah, 100%.
And so
the confidence is so important, and it's a confidence that I understand your situation and I can help you. If I say I can help you, I mean it.
Yeah. And so just in leading to wrap up, tell me about some of the intangibles that are that third part of the book.
Yeah, and that's the other part, right? I mean, if anyone's familiar with sports, like I'm more of a basketball fan than anything else. The intangibles are those little things that don't show up on the scoreboard. They're tough to track. It's the hustle plays, like diving for a basketball. Like that's not a track stat, but it's an intangible that could lead to the winning of the game. And the key is intangibles don't matter until you're playing against another professional. When it's a professional versus a professional, it's that one little thing that could make the difference in the game and the score. In sales, the key is you've got to always remember you're playing against a professional. You're playing against a human brain that has an amygdala that's trying to keep it safe from harm and danger, like it's living in a hut 100,000 years ago, and the wrong berry could kill you, right? And so buying your thing could kill that person. That's what their brain is worried about at all times. And so you've got to remember that. And one of the intangibles I see all the time is people pause. Like if there's one thing that always tells me if somebody's an order taker is they pause. And I'll give you an example. So imagine I'm going through my process, right? And then you, Dr. John, you stop me and say, hey, wait a second. Is there a fee for this? And I say, yes. And then I just pause, right? I just leave this terrible dead air. Nature doesn't like a vacuum and it wants to fill it. And so the prospect, because their brain is afraid, just naturally, it's just the way it is, wants to fill that. And so they throw another question at. Okay, well, what is the fee? It's $1,000. Pause. Another punch. I call it death by 1,000 punches. Like here comes another punch. The prospect's just going to keep punching you and you're just going to keep taking them. And either you really strong and take a lot of punches or you're going to get knocked out. And so that pausing is so bad. Instead, you do some strategies that I have in the book where you just go back to your question or you ask them a follow-up question, but you cannot pause. If you pause without being strong, you will get knocked out.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And, you know, to go back to your basketball metaphor, it makes me think of John Wooden, who was so into the details that he would teach his players how to put on their socks to reduce blisters to keep their feet fresh. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, when I read about that years ago, I was just like, wow, like, who does that? Well, one of the most winningest coaches in college basketball does that.
Yeah. And when you're playing as a professional, your goal is to be a professional and you're up against other professionals, the difference maker could be your speed running without a blister versus somebody else running with a blister. That's it.
Running pain free. Yeah. Trying to block a breakaway. Did you play basketball growing up? Is that?
No, I like basketball, but no, despite being tall I am not very good at it. I'm good at hustling. I'm good at defense. My general strategy was fouls aren't transferable, so I might as well use them up every game. But no, I don't come from a coordinated athletic background. I became more coordinated as I've gotten older, but no, I did not play very well.
Well, so you must be happy that the basketball is back amidst all the COVID.
Yeah, it's definitely fascinating. I mean, this kind of fits with my outlook on life, which is the smart people and the people who want to be successful and want to survive and thrive will always find a way, right? Like mm-hmm. nature will find a way. People will find a way. We can't do this. We can't fill arenas. What do? We put TVs around here. We have people at home. They can be selected. They can watch it. We can play games. We can simulate it. We can play football. We can play baseball. You know, the people who want to succeed will find a way. The people who want to blame and want to wait for things to get better will sit back.
It was interesting to me, just from an emotional literacy perspective, the gap, the vacuum that I felt with the absence of sports in early COVID, and the joy that I had and seeing basketball come back and football come back, baseball a little bit less so, but there's a big emotional difference, because I think one of the ways that men can display any emotion without fear of humiliation is through watching sports.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So I just kind of interesting to me that I've never been so happy to have sports back on. Actually, I've never had sports off for any period of time.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, in a healthy way, and you probably know way more about this from your perspective, from a clinical side, but from a healthy way, that's important, and it's good, and to take mm-hmm. part and to celebrate these gladiator type events and this thing, and just kind of, you know, get that energy from it and this, you know, primal type part. Unhealthy is like putting all of your personal identity into that sports event or team such that it dictates your happiness and your well-being, right? But yeah, I mean, I think that's always important.
Yeah. So again, in wrapping up, let me ask you the question, is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have?
No, I think you did a good job. I mean, you know, there's so much we could talk about. I think that's a good summary of it. I mean, it's, you know, again, without this making it a 2-hour episode.
Okay, so let me ask you this. With, you know, the thousands of screaming fans that I have that now want to, you know, find your knowledge and devour it, where can they get a hold of you?
Best place and simplest one is jasoncutter.com. So if you go there, that's a hub for everything I have. You can find a link for the book directly on my site or on Amazon. You find my podcast. I'm very active on LinkedIn, but jasoncutter.com is like the easiest, simplest place to start based on what you're looking for.
Fantastic. Well, Jason, thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it. It's been a blast.
Thanks, Dr. John. I'm so glad that we got to connect and share for your type of audience, and hopefully this helps.
Absolutely. I think everyone actually needs sales skills. I think it's one of the valuable skills that you need in life. And I think coming at it from a place of authenticity is the way to go. So
well, and what I say on my show is everything in life is sales, right? So every conversation, mm-hmm. relationship, everything, it's all persuasion and selling. And so, you know, it's important.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Evolved Caveman. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you again next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Evolved Caveman podcast. If you like what you've heard, support us by subscribing, leaving reviews, and sharing the podcast with friends and colleagues. For the latest, most powerful tools to connect with like-minded men, join the Facebook group at The Evolved Caveman. Follow Dr. John on Instagram at The Evolved Caveman, all one word, or join the email list by visiting guidetoself.com.